We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Yesterday, Cliff Sora shared a top 10 list of hot fusion restaurants, a vegan gluten-free mashup recipe, and a podcast featuring organic food trends. Oh, TMI, too much internet information. That's oversharing. Cliff, Geico has something worth sharing with your friends. Like how on geico.com you could save hundreds on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim. Gluten-free info that's easy to swallow. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you deposit for a free contest entry today. It's Friday, September 4th, 2015. Derek Van Riper here with Mario Puig. NFL Draft _RW on Twitter for those of you who want to follow along at home. We got some injury updates today. Alshon Jeffrey, LeSean McCoy, Travis Kelce, among others. The preseason wrapped up on Thursday night. Thankfully, we'll break that down. At least the games are going to start to count. I mean, that's the huge thing, is the preseason's over. Like, aside from the fact that you're not going to watch meaningless football anymore, the next football you watch will be meaningful. I think that's the key there. We may squeeze in a little bit of grilled cheese talk before we sign off, too, if there's time. Maybe a grilled cheese cheat sheet will be unveiled. We'll see. I may not have enough time to do that today, but it's on the back burner at the very least, or the back griddle, I guess you'd say. This podcast is now available for subscription on iTunes or Stitcher. Please leave us a nice review if you happen to be listening to us on those platforms, and that's where you go to unsubscribe from this podcast if you hate what we talk about today. So, you know, just helping you out there in case you don't like this
podcast. Just subscribe, though. Just stay subscribed, guys.
Just stay on there so your device continues to get new episodes and it counts as traffic for us.
You don't have to listen, but please stay subscribed and tell your friends.
It would also be cool if, even if you didn't want to listen, if you would just play the file and then just walk away from your device for a while. Like, if you didn't want to listen, like, that'd be an acceptable alternative as well.
Yeah, you can do that.
Well, the biggest news in my world today is I was actually offered a trade in the Stopa Law Firm League. For those who aren't familiar, it's a 12-team super flex league. So basically, it's a two-quarterback format. Long story short, it was a one-for-one offer I received. It was Tom Brady coming my way straight up for Lamar Miller, which, again, in a one-quarterback league, I would never do. I'd much prefer Miller. But in this instance, Mario, I'm positioned to have to lean on Brian Hoyer as my second quarterback, which is bad. I've got Andre Ellington as a third running back, so he kind of slots in from flex to RB2. It would probably put like Marcus Colston or a Danny Woodhead type player in my flex spot, which is, and again, it's a half point PPR, so it's not a terrible format for guys like Colston and Woodhead. But ultimately, I'm just trying to figure out if I'm willing to give up on Lamar Miller. I don't think it's a bad offer. I just want to know, like, should I give up Lamar Miller in this deal?
Well, Lamar Miller himself is a fine asset. If you were to trade him, it wouldn't be because, like, oh, it's, you know, down on Miller sort of thing. Obviously, he had just under 1,100 yards rushing last year. 5.1 yards per carry on 200 or more attempts is always impressive. He did that. He caught 38 passes. I don't know what reason they have in Miami to not give him more work this year, because he's obviously quite good. The offense could be improved there, too, if Tannehill takes a step forward. And, you know, the rookie Devontae Parker and Kenny Stills provide some explosiveness downfield. But, yeah, as far as this specific trade goes, you said behind Ellington it was Woodhead and who at running back?
Well, it's Woodhead at running back as far as the next guy I'd probably have to lean on. And then Marcus Colston is my receiver on the bench
who is
I'm not using.
Who is behind Woodhead otherwise at running back?
No, I got Buck Allen after that. So, my roster is Murray at the first running back spot. Lamar Miller is the second. Ellington's the third. Woodhead and Buck Allen. That's my five running back group right now.
Do you have a third quarterback behind Hoyer?
No, I don't, because the Brady suspension was vacated, so Jimmy Garoppolo, worthless, and RG3 got concussed, and his coach hates him, so I only have Hoyer as a second option.
Nice. I actually would probably hold on to Miller. I think between Murray and Ellington, you'd have a little more durability troubles there than I would like to put in the top two running backs. And I played a quarterback flex league for the first time last year, and I definitely overemphasize the quarterback thing and underemphasize the running back position. So it's like the difference between a Hoyer average week and, you know, the bottom-ish tier of performances from some of the above-average guys will be surprisingly close, I think. But the distance between a Lamar Miller and, like, a Terrence West or something like that is pretty big, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And there are enough jobs that'll turn over at quarterback, too, where I could probably find a third quarterback if I'm just diligent about getting on the waiver wire in the early weeks.
You can have Manziel save the season for you in week 8.
Could stash him away. I think Tyrod Taylor is up for grabs in Fab.
Go for Taylor.
I might go pretty heavy for Taylor. There's at least two Bills fans in this league, though, between Payne and Stopa,
yeah,
so it's going to cost me a fortune.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, unless they don't like Taylor, I don't know what their opinions of him are, but I actually like Taylor just because I think he fits with that run-heavy mentality that they have. Like, if you're going all in on the running game like they are in Buffalo, it's like you might as well have that guy who can kill teams on the bootleg, which Taylor can definitely do. He can be, like, a top-tier runner.
Yeah, I think that's it's a really good point there. So I think I'm leaning towards rejecting this deal at this point. I mean, I'd move
on. I think I'd have to. Unless you can get him to cough up some little bit of depth at running back, which I don't think he would.
No, probably not. And like I said, I think it's fair dollar for dollar.
Yeah,
I just don't think it's a good move for my roster, given my depth behind the guys that I have and the injury histories that they have. Oh, thanks for the counsel. I appreciate that. As they like to say, you can always tell a Milford man, and the Bears are going to play it close to the vest regarding updates about said Milford man, Alshon Jeffrey. Jeffrey has been neither seen nor heard by the team's beat writers. He hasn't practiced since August 12th, and that's at least since August 12th.
That's
not even confirmed
gross.
That he practiced then. No Kevin White already for this team. Is there anyone cracking the top 35 receivers, think value meter here, from this team if Jeffrey sits against the Packers in week one?
I don't think I could convince myself that very safely anyway. Like, you can definitely see the high ceiling version of the projection ending up there, but you got to go with Eddie Royal as the candidate. I don't know what to make of Eddie Royal. Like, even back when he was a prospect coming out of Virginia Tech, I like didn't like him at the time, and then he had that huge rookie year somehow, and then he goes back to doing nothing for like 3 years, and then he's just not very good, goes to San Diego, and for some reason they love throwing to him in the red zone of all places. It's just been such a weird trajectory, and now he ends up in Chicago, and I don't know what to expect again, because it's every time he changes setting, every time the year changes, it's like everything I think about Eddie Royal inverts, and I'm just wrong about him. But if if Jeffrey's out, Royal will get targets for sure. So even if he's not any good, like he can go like 9 or 10 targets in week one with Jeffrey out. So that's that. I'm gonna have to guess like at least 65 yards I would expect from him. But I can imagine various sorts of dysfunctions that that team will have to deal with. So I don't want to assume he'll have like much scoring potential, because I can see them kind of getting rocked in that game.
And you have a QB who loves nicotine more than any quarterback who's ever played in this league. I mean, I kind of worry about Jay this year as a guy that will probably go from like a pack a day to 3 packs a day and most likely lose his job at some point. Like, this is going to be a very stressful season for Jay Cutler.
The thing is, it's like Jimmy Clausen is probably just too dislikable of a backup for the smoking habit to really burn Jay too bad. It's gonna hurt his wind for sure. But I think if he loses that job, he'll have to mix in other substances than just nicotine.
By the way, Liss and I were talking about the survivor implications of week one during the show on Wednesday. Week one's kind of odd. I was looking at all the matchups in detail, and obviously we're going to be looking at them very closely throughout the next week, getting ready for our DraftKings lineups, but also getting ready for our season-long lineups as well. There's really not a clear option behind the Packers that you definitely feel great about. There's not a double-digit favorite anywhere on the board. A lot of the teams playing at home are the weaker team in a matchup, so you have to take a road favorite, which is always a difficult thing to do. You get a handful of teams playing teams within their own division. It's actually going to be, I think, a bloodbath in week one of Survivor this year.
Okay, I was just pulling up the week one schedule because I just don't know what the games are yet. But as far as Survivor, let's see. I like the Dolphins against Washington because let's be real. That's such a just dumpster fire, a tower of dumpster fires stacked. several miles into the air,
a parking structure full of dumpster fires,
just a nation full of dumpsters that have been set aflame, and like that's what the Washington Redskins are. Whereas I think the Dolphins are a good team, so I think they're very foundationally solid. Like, you're not going to run very well on them. Washington probably won't pass very well on anyone, and that. The secondary for Washington is still garbage, and Dolphins have some pretty deep pass catchers. People forgot, like, they have Jordan Cameron there in addition to, you know, Jarvis Landry and Kenny Stills and Devontae Parker and Greg Jennings and whatever. That's one that I really like. But, otherwise, some of these are pretty grim-looking. Browns and Jets, that should be entertaining.
That should be a great game. I'm going to watch exactly zero snaps from that game on Sunday. I'll probably see some after the fact, looking for highlights, trying to watch Isaiah Crowell and guys like that.
Yeah. If Duke plays, then that'll be interesting, but it's his concussion or whatever. Otherwise, I guess maybe it's interesting that we have the 1994 expansion rematch of Panthers-Jaguars.
Never forget.
Always like that.
Never forget. Well,
yeah, this is boring.
The thing that changed since Wednesday, of course, is the Brady suspension being vacated. So
yeah,
with the Patriots now favored by 7, I mean, they're the biggest favorite on the board this week. I would think the majority of owners out there are probably either going Patriots or Packers. So if you really want to steer away from the two consensus picks in Survivor, that's when you really run into trouble. This just may be a week where if you don't believe in the Dolphins on the road at Washington, I think you should. I think that's a good pick. You probably want to go ahead and just stick with the masses and just hope that the chalk holds up in those cases. I mean, even though it's an in-division matchup, I look at the Packers, I just have a hard time seeing the Bears pulling off that upset in week one.
Yeah, Green Bay, I think, will win that. I think the Bears are probably in real danger of finishing last in that division. I'll say real quickly, I probably wouldn't want to go with the Patriots just because I can't imagine it's that good of a strategy to basically go against a quarterback as good as Roethlisberger, especially when it's a week one thing where it's like both sides have had time to prepare, and the Steelers, for whatever questions they have, I wouldn't really question their coaching. Excuse me. So I expect Roethlisberger to be good, and it's like I'd rather have my team going against, you know, the Kirk Cousinses of the world.
If you can take that Miami defense, have him tee off on Kirk Cousins, especially. Talk about a defense to stream and one to think about picking up for your DraftKings lineup in week one. The Dolphins are a great target. I mean, not going to be able to stream them in season long, but if you're drafting this weekend, go after that defense because they're going to be good all year, and this is a great matchup to kick things off in week one. It is surprising to me that you're getting 7 on the Steelers side. I'd take the Steelers plus the points in that opener if I were in Vegas next weekend. I won't be, so
right.
I'll just be enjoying the game for other reasons. But
you just can't see, like, even a guy as good as Brady, you can't really see him winning more than, like, 5.5 out of 10 times against a player like Roethlisberger, I feel like. I don't know. Although, I mean, they are at home, so that Foxborough thing is always a huge deal. So if that's probably why I would make the bet rather than, like, Brady being back. It's like they're at home, and for some reason they're just so much better there.
No Martavis Bryant and no Le'Veon Bell, of course, so that adds more to it. I think that's probably where that number comes from. But still,
fair enough.
Still, I kind of buy into that idea that the Steelers are a well-constructed team. They're well-coached. They're very unlikely to go in there and get blown out. And usually those Thursday night openers are pretty tight games anyway.
Yeah, and I feel like Roethlisberger is just a good big stage quarterback too. So either way, I can definitely understand why people would go with that, with Bell out and Martavis Bryant not there.
Some potentially good news here for the Cardinals. Michael Floyd may be available for week one against the Saints. Is there reliable production in this receiving core when Floyd, Larry Fitzgerald, and John Brown are all healthy? Because it would seem as though this spot against the Saints, it is at home in Arizona. Over-under is 47, so you should have plenty of offense. Cardinals favored by 3. So we're talking about a game that's likely to be in the 25 to 22, 24 to 21 range, and that favors Arizona. I mean, if the Cardinals are going to put up 24 points, I would think Carson Palmer and these receivers have a pretty good week in week one.
Yeah, I don't think that the Arizona offense is well suited to scoring on the ground. So if they do score points, I would be inclined to, you know, suspect Carson Palmer had a lot of the shares of it. So I don't know about consistency as far as Floyd, Fitzgerald, Brown. They were the most drastic opposite possible last year, especially Floyd. I don't know. I can't imagine what the deal is there. But if Palmer is at full strength, I can see that the aggregate numbers in that passing game being good. And so there has to be somebody who's useful. Maybe it'll be all three. But obviously the ceiling is not high. And then when you combine the lack of ceiling with the low floor, it's generally a situation I try to avoid because it's you'd like to offset the low ceiling with at least some consistency. But I don't see that happening there.
I have no shares of the Arizona receiving core. I don't expect that to change this weekend. I've got the home league draft coming up early next week. Not going to happen there either. The NFFC primetime draft coming up here on Saturday night. I don't want to go for a massive cash prize with Arizona receivers. That just seems like a horrible way to go into the season. I would feel terrible about my receiving core if I had built around any of those guys. And they're not going to fall. None of them are going to fall far enough where I feel like I'm getting a good value either.
Right.
Rex Ryan remains cautiously optimistic that LeSean McCoy will play against the Colts in their opener. McCoy has been slowed by a hamstring injury. Talked to Stefania Bell of ESPN during the XM show today, and it seemed like the way the Bills examined him, they were looking to see if the hamstring had actually come off of the bone. And that's not the case. That didn't happen. But kind of just based on her description of what they evaluated him for, this isn't just a typical muscle strain. It's not just the pulled hamstring that's got a slight tear, that's a 1 to 2 week injury that you can play through. This seems to be something a little more severe, to the point where even if he goes in week one, you're worried that he might be limited, and you're worried about the possibility of a recurring issue being here. I don't have McCoy anywhere, and I don't think that's going to change between now and start of week one either.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. If it seems like a low bar to set when it's like the first thing they check is whether the integrity of like the limb is intact. So I don't like the sound of that thing, and I don't like how they appear to be kind of rushing him back. I don't see the point in him playing if I owned him, which I don't. Grateful for that. But if I did own him, I wouldn't even want him trying to race back for week one, because it's like if that guy plays gimpy on an offense that's already going to be bad, what use is he? And the re-injury risk is certainly high. I mean, we saw a similar thing with, not that the circumstances surrounding them were at all similar, but like Calvin Johnson returning prematurely multiple times last year. It's like, who does that help? So I would almost want him to sit out if I did own him. But yeah, behind him, it's hard to tell what they would do if he does sit. I'm inclined to think Carlos Williams is the best player of the group, but he's coming back from what sounds like a hernia of some kind. Don't know what his week one situation is. Bryce Brown is just not good, and Anthony Dixon is a fullback, so it's terrible. They should let Tyrod Taylor run 15 times in that game. Just go with a temporary wishbone and like just run lots of end arounds with Watkins and Harvin. Move Harvin to running back. Do that. There you go.
Yeah, Harvin at running back. I mean, I swear, and I hope I'm sticking to this. Percy Harvin is a useless kitchen gadget. You get excited about the idea of what he could do, and he just disappoints you all the time. He's the slap chop or the magic bullet.
He cuts the garlic into triangles. He's so good.
He's the machine that you can put in a raw turkey, a 15-pound raw turkey into, and this thing sits on your counter, and within 3 hours, you have a turkey you can supposedly eat. That's Percy Harvin. He's that piece of crap, whatever that thing's called.
I would pay for that.
Well, you got to watch local TV over the air on Sunday mornings.
I don't know if that means I'm going to end up drafting him imminently, therefore, but yeah.
Though at least the price on Harvin is next to nothing now, so those who still want to kick the tires on him can do it without overpaying, but
yeah, go ahead, man. Whatever. Yeah, I probably won't do it.
Travis Kelce, working his way back from an injury, left practice early on Monday. We finally found out as the week rolled along that it was a sprained ankle. If you look at Kelce, I don't think this is a big deal because it's not a high ankle sprain. It's just the garden variety ankle sprain. So unless it turns into something that he aggravates on a week-to-week basis, which it's possible, I'm just not worried about it at the outset. You know, I know if you roll or sprain your ankle once, you're more susceptible to sprains for a brief period after that. So that's all I'm hoping he can avoid, you know, like the multiple week, hey, right. I aggravated this for the second or third time where it just keeps compounding on itself.
Sorry, do we know which foot it happened to and whether it was the same leg that had the microfracture knee surgery?
That's a good question. I have not seen an indication as to whether it was left or right.
It's not something that, if it is on the same leg, it's not the kind of thing that would make me like, you know, swerve on my projections or whatever, but it is something to keep in mind a little bit, because even if the ankle is sound, like the compensation that it might stress on his other joints in the leg, and you would worry about the knee specifically, but even if it's not the knee, like if he needs to compensate for whatever the extra strain the knee takes, it could be, you know, in the foot bone, wherever. So yeah, that's something to keep an eye on, I guess, if if it's something that might cause further stress to something that was already vulnerable a bit.
Hashtag kinetic chain.
Sorry, could you say that again?
Oh, hashtag kinetic chain.
Can it what?
The kinetic chain.
Kinetic chain?
Yeah.
What is it? What?
Well, it's just, you know, like your leg. It's a kinetic chain, right?
So I didn't know if this was like a new, like one of those bracelets that make your balance better or something.
No, it's not. No, it's not like something you put on your leg.
I didn't know
that
if I could
helps
buy
you.
It.
No,
I wanted not. To for a minute.
No, it's just basically like if you have a problem with your ankle, the kinetic chain is that your knee
you
could be stressed or your hip could be stressed, anything
there
that's connected.
Go. Yeah. I was trying to come up with something as coherent as that, but just couldn't really put it together.
I need to give up my dream of one day being a stand-up comedian because I'm falling flat on my face.
That was like science-y. That was the problem. It's like I need stupid slang and like very basic words to grasp whatever you're going with.
All right. Well, I can try to ease into this next one for you here. Dwayne Bowe will not be released, according to Browns head coach Mike Pettine. I assume this is because they have guaranteed him $9 million after signing him this offseason, which is such a Cleveland Browns thing to do. I mean, like this is such a predictable scenario. You have a guy in Dwayne Bowe who's supposed to be your number one receiver, dealing with a hamstring injury right now too, playing in the preseason finale Thursday night also. Like, how many number one receivers played a snap last night?
They were all, fourth receivers, fifth receivers, certainly. If not for signing Brian Hartline, or did they trade for him? I can't remember. That Dwayne Bowe signing was the most Cleveland Browns thing of all time, up until or in light of, anyway, the Hartline signing. They just love bad receivers who can't do anything. It's amazing how committed they are to that. It'll be interesting. Like, do they expect Terrell Pryor to make that team? Because I feel like he should be just their number one receiver just by default of like height, athleticism, or size, athleticism, dimensions, just because the other guys are all just a bunch of, you know, flat tires, basically.
Yeah, because of the simple ability, driven by his athleticism to just be able to do something, Terrell Pryor should be on that roster. So far, he's survived. He played a little bit last night. I don't think he caught a pass. He actually had a couple of runs that were a design for him, which do anything you can to put the ball in his hands. I mean,
he's a beast with the ball.
I do think he's the kind of guy also that if you're going to go for two more often, you have a player that was a quarterback in this league just a couple of years ago, you put him on the field and all sorts of different things open up there too.
So, yeah. Sorry. I just noticed this. The most Browns thing of all time, actually, I was wrong. It's not the Bowe signing or acquiring Hartline. It's taking Justin Gilbert, the cornerback, ahead of Odell Beckham.
Oh.
And Justin Gilbert is like, the CFL probably doesn't even want him. He's just like the worst of all time. So it's, you can say that this was avoidable in a way.
So what's going to happen in Cleveland, this is exactly what's going to happen. Brian Hartline had back-to-back seasons with at least 70 catches and 1,000 yards for the Dolphins in 2012 and 2013. He's going to do that again. And in those two seasons combined, he had 5 TDs. He caught 150 balls and only caught 5 of them in the end zone or caught it in random. I mean, that's almost impossible.
That's amazing. The Browns would just love to have him and like 2001 Keyshawn Johnson on the same team. Whatever year that was when he had like 109 catches and one touchdown. It's so bad, and you can just see the train wreck from months back. It's just like that train's gonna crash. So it's gonna be really gross. The quarterback is bad. The receivers are the worst. They have like the worst quarterback and the worst receivers at the same time. That's awesome.
That's just piling on.
That's
yourself.
A touche for sure. I'm impressed.
It's hard to do that. It really, really is. Fantasy football just got a whole lot more interesting. Week 1, DraftKings will be hosting the biggest fantasy football contest ever, giving out over $10 million in prizes. Go to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code ROTOWIRE to play free for your shot at $1 million in cash prizes in the Week 1 play action contest. That's promo code ROTOWIRE for free entry now with your first deposit at DraftKings.com. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. So you're thinking about the Week 1 millionaire maker, because we all are this time of year.
I got four reserved already.
You may, what's going to happen is you're going to have a few beers this weekend.
Going to get real smart.
You're not going to drive. You're not.
No, I don't own a car.
That helps. But
yeah. Don't have a bike either.
That's fantastic.
I can't do it.
But what you can do is you can definitely reserve more spots, and I think you should. And I think you got to start looking through the lens of at least having one entry. If you have multiple entries, one entry has to have at least one player where you're just like, my goal is to have someone who plays snaps who nobody else in this entire field is going to have. And I think that player, maybe the man we just talked about, number one receiver on the Cleveland Browns, Dwayne Bowe. Think about this. $2 million to first place, by the way, for the Week 1 Millie Maker. Do you think the ownership of Dwayne Bowe in that tournament will be over or under 0.1%?
So if are you asking me if you pick him, will it say 0.00 in the ownership?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would say...
I don't
say,
know.
They don't have
the extra decimal, do they?
I think they do two. I think they do two. Okay. So it'll be 0.09 or less, you win.
We want to get that 0.000 guy.
Yeah, you want the Blutarski.
6.5 points.
Yeah. You absolutely want the Blutarski ownership level. I mean, Dwayne Bowe is $4,300 against the Jets. Who else besides Brian Hartline is actually going to catch passes here?
Okay, here's the thing. I don't know that he's actually going to get targets there. Like, it sounds like he's like actually just bad and they don't really even want to play him. It's just they're holding on to that contract. But then the other thing is, I don't know if I would confidently bet that the Browns can throw for 110 yards on that defense. So, I mean, Todd Bowles is running it. He made that Arizona defense overachieve. In New York, he actually has the personnel to like really dominate with that defense. The front four... or at least the front three, especially, they have three or four guys who can be like all pro types as defensive tackle personnel. I don't know if they're going to get much from their edge rushers, but Todd Bowles didn't have much to work with in Arizona as far as that went. Once John Abraham went, away, but they still remained very tough. Your quarterbacks didn't want to see that defense, and he's got Revis and Cromartie over there, and they got a good secondary, and he's going to just clamp down on those crap receivers, and just McCown is not going to be happy that day.
There's nothing to like at all about the Cleveland offense in Week 1. If you said you have to use a Brown in your lineup, like you're forced to, I would hope Isaiah Crowell could plunge in for like a short TD.
I need Duke. If Duke's not in, I just can't do it.
I mean, I'm assuming no Duke in Week 1, but it's a possibility he plays. He's just concussed right now. He's going through the protocol, and Mike Pettine says it's none of your business as far as where he's at.
Yeah, if he does play, I mean, he's probably not that cheap on there, though, at least relative for the risk he'd be taking on. But we know McCown's not going to complete passes to his receivers. So maybe, like, Duke, if he does play, could end up with, like, six catches for, like, 22 yards or something.
So the best thing about Dwayne Bowe at $4,300 is that you save $100 on Devontae Adams at $4,400. Of course, the week one prices were generated early to get people to sign up and reserve their spots. And, mm-hmm. you know, with Adams at $4,400, that was built around the idea of Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb shredding that Bears secondary. At $4,400, Devontae Adams' ownership should be extremely high. He's almost a must-own at that price, especially given how bad that Bears defense is and just the lack of clarity as far as the other receivers in the offense behind Cobb and Adams right now. Plus, with Cobb coming off of that shoulder injury of his own, you may see even more targets going Adams' way.
Yeah, I don't know if I would really believe in, you know, the must pick kind of thing with a field this big. Excuse me, but yeah, Adams obviously is a great value at that. With that particular matchup, I would almost want to invest. If you have enough multi-entry capability, anyway. I would definitely want to consider getting a little exposure to Janice and Montgomery too. Both because it sounds like they might both play a good amount anyway. Both because, like, Janice is better on the outside than Montgomery is, but Montgomery is better in the slot. So if Green Bay wants to offset Nelson's loss by giving Cobb some looks on the outside rather than in the slot, it's like seems like Montgomery goes in. If they want to keep Cobb in the slot, seems like Janice might go in. But yeah, that's a game that I can see being a blowout. So I think there might be reason to think those guys get a little more second half run than they would otherwise when they're a 3,000 pick each. So, but yeah, you definitely want to get some Adams exposure, I think, because he profiles as a pretty good player. Like, he didn't have an efficient rookie year, but he seems pretty good. And if Cobb suits up, you would think that he would probably be able to avoid Kyle Fuller, who's probably their most impressive cornerback out there. And that defense will improve. Like, Vic Fangio is a good defensive coordinator. John Fox has a good defensive track record. They'll improve, but the personnel still isn't good. It's largely a misfit for the scheme they're trying to run. They have an overload of 4-3 specific personnel, and they're trying to you know, cram in a 3-4 alignment that just doesn't really suit the personnel. But yeah, so I like Green Bay. I think there's a couple things you would want to consider, and especially a millionaire kind of thing. Some of that, I think the third and fourth spot at receiver for Green Bay is worth a glance at least.
So you mean you don't like Jared Allen as an outside linebacker?
It sounds like he's actually doing okay with his transition, but like the other ones, like Lamar Houston and Willie Young, like, are you kidding me? Like, Lamar Houston should be playing defensive tackle. He's like a 300-pound guy. But yeah, anyway, I don't know if Vic Fangio will work as much magic in Chicago as he did in San Francisco, because Harbaugh presumably had quite a bit to do with that. We'll find out soon enough, I guess. But yeah, the millionaire maker, like, I'm looking back. Doug Martin's definitely pretty cheap at $4,500. I think his preseason hype will send a lot of people that way. But otherwise, it's like, I think, and especially if you've got, like, point per reception scoring like this, slot guys like Eddie Royal and Stevie Johnson make sense, because both of those teams, especially Royal, if Jeffrey's out, you know, they have questions about their receivers. And they got, you know, good enough quarterbacks that they could pile up at least the point per reception scoring a little bit.
I'm warming up to the idea of Stevie Johnson as a very late round full point PPR target.
Oh, yeah.
There will be a lot of targets there, and the efficiency was pretty good. He basically just didn't see that many targets because the Niners offense last year didn't throw the ball, and they had plenty of guys to throw to also. So you look at where he is in San Diego, he's got a more consistent quarterback, going to get more volume. And working in a situation where there's
Gates is suspended,
even less talent around him, and then Gates too. Yeah, you get more targets probably in the red zone in the short term too from Stevie Johnson. But I think you're right. I think he could be an interesting third option or a flex option in DraftKings for Week One. Let's take a look at some of the preseason finales here. We'll run through these. Bears and Browns closing out their season preseason with everyone else on Thursday night. Kadeem Carey versus Jeremy Langford for the backup running back spot, I think, is probably the most interesting thing in this game. Both ran well. Carey was 12 carries for 68 yards. Langford was 9 carries for 55 yards. If you're kind of throwing a lottery ticket out there at one of those backs, which one do you take the chance on?
Neither in like week one or anything, but I don't know. I think Langford has the better prospect profile, but Kadeem Carey was a lot more productive in college. They're pretty similar. Neither is very remarkable. But I mean, at least Langford has the long speed. Carey's undersized and under athletic, so he pretty much is dependent on like vision and just being crafty, whereas Langford can actually outrun people.
Yeah, Langford, I mean, he put up big numbers after Le'Veon Bell left Michigan State. I mean, this is a guy that I think can be
fastest 40
in short yardage, but also good in the middle of the field, too, because of that speed.
Yeah, fastest 40 among the running backs of the combine, which I don't think is totally accurate of his game, you know, speed presence. But, yeah, he's a legitimate, you know, he was worth that fourth-round pick they spent on him.
So we got one thing from the Dolphins-Bucks game I want to discuss. Jay Ajayi looked pretty good, 9 carries for 66 yards, but he suffered a cracked rib, which could put him in a position to end up on IR, maybe IR designated to return, maybe just miss a couple of weeks. He could try to play through it. But they didn't play Damian Williams in this game, and they obviously didn't play Lamar Miller. So I think even if Ajayi tries to play through this and manages to keep that third running back spot on the roster, he's not looking at getting any touches until like week 5 or week 6 at the earliest.
It sounded like they were a little sour on him anyway. I couldn't tell whether it was like, you know, that tough guy coach nonsense of like, well, he's got to get back on the field, you know, when he's got an injury that doesn't let him play. They didn't like his pass blocking early in training camp. I can't claim to know whether that changed over the last few weeks, but if Williams and Miller are clearly 1-2, I would definitely worry about him landing on the IR for the year just because they probably don't want to deal with him right now. And like, it removes the question of them having to deal with like, do we want to save a roster spot for him?
Yeah.
So
I think that happens a lot with later round picks. Ajayi was a 5th rounder. You know, you can stash him away for a year, decide if you like him, get a closer look and practice for a longer period of time. And then from there, go ahead and make that decision. Packers Saints, I actually watched a good chunk of this game, not really because I wanted to, just because it was on a big TV directly in front of my face. Brett Hundley played pretty well, 16 of 23, 236, 4 touchdowns. I mean, this is a guy that at one point was kind of projected to be a late first round pick, and then last year at UCLA happened and he fell a long way to the Packers. Back in draft season. Yeah, 5th round seemed like a steal
for
him there.
Yeah, it was basically Brett Hundley is paying for the sins of NFL front offices that thought Logan Thomas was worth drafting. They're overreacting to, you know, the recency of a perceived to be similar kind of player, you know, the strong-armed, athletic guy who ran a lot in college, and they just were like, oh, well, he can't learn how to pass. So he was so much better than Thomas, though. It was ridiculous that he fell that far. I thought he was worth a 2nd-round pick. Green Bay's got the best 3 deep at quarterback by miles and miles.
Yeah, Hundley and Scott Tolzien being a part of that depth behind Aaron Rodgers. Otherwise, there wasn't a whole lot to note in this game, which is going to be the case for most of these, to be completely honest. But Brandon Coleman hauled in all 4 of his targets for 82 yards. I just think the only concern I have here is that he was playing a lot in a completely meaningless game, which kind of gives you an idea of where he might stand as far as week 1 snaps goes.
Yeah, I don't know what to guess exactly the New Orleans offense will look like from a approach standpoint. Like, it really seems like they're committed to the backfield more this year between Spiller and Ingram getting invested in like they did, and they gave Marcus Colson a pay cut, and yet they didn't really add any depth at receiver to, you know, offset the otherwise implied role reduction that goes with that pay cut. Coleman, he seems to have kind of, you know, by default found that third receiver spot, but it doesn't sound like they're inclined to like make him make it a goal to get him the ball or anything. He's kind of just like an awkward receiver. He's almost like too tall, too lanky, but he does have some big play upside because he just has enormous catch radius and he's faster than people normally are when they're as tall as he is. But I would almost wonder if it's like Kerry Robinson will be a bigger part of that offense than the third receiver will this year.
Yeah, it's possible. I think as long as CJ Spiller's down, Kerry Robinson does become a little bit more interesting.
Spiller is like I think he could catch like 60, 70 passes in that offense because it's like, other than Cooks, who like seems like a near lock for like 90 to 100 receptions, like Ben Watson's not going to do anything. Josh Hill, they apparently view as basically like a fullback who motions out sometimes. And who else is going to do it? Like, I don't know. I can't think of anybody.
That's funny comment on Hill just based on some of the love I've seen for that guy on Twitter. Just kind of blind, like, hey, he's a big guy that kind of looks a little bit like Jimmy Graham and plays on the same team that Jimmy Graham used to play for.
Yeah, I don't know what – I haven't watched enough of him to know about his skill set. His athletic testing was very high, but it's like if the team doesn't – we went through this with Ladarius Green last year. It's like if the team won't use him, it doesn't matter what he's capable of. They're not going to give him the chance to show it.
Maybe we'll see it again with Latarius Green this year, too. Gates is suspended.
I'm flipping the table if they do it again. Like, Gates is not on the field. You have to throw him the ball. He's, like, their best receiver. That's so dumb.
Please flip the conference room table, not the table that we're sitting at right now. Just because
there's a lot more important things here.
Yeah, there are important pieces of equipment on this table. Talking here quickly about the Jets and Eagles, 42 combined carries for Zach Stacy and Daryl Richardson. That is why you tune in to NFL preseason games.
Is this the Daryl Richardson that I probably paid $43 for in a $200 auction 2 years ago? That guy?
That is him. I saw some people spend money on Daryl Richardson a few years ago. I probably had
him
in the
steak league that
year.
Somebody went up to like $35 because he was just like the last starting running back. Oh man.
Yeah, when you get the last running back in 16 team stake league in the auction and you have the problem of too much money left because you weren't aggressive enough early, that's what happens. Daryl Richardson happens. Nothing else really of note here. This looked like a game where both teams were just kind of trying to get through it as quickly
Tebow,
as possible.
Tebow.
Oh yeah, him. Tebow.
He's so good.
11 of 17 for 189 and two touchdowns in this one. Also ran the ball four times for 32 yards. He was made for Chip Kelly's offense.
Yeah, he was. And it's actually, I can understand why people might be worried about him kind of stealing some rushing stats on that team, especially from DeMarco Murray in the red zone, because it's like Murray's kind of injury prone, especially if it's like a grind down the clock situation. Don't you want Tebow to take that beating instead of the guy who's missed like, you know, three games a year up until last year?
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I think they're also going to they're going to be aggressive going for two. I think they're going to be among the most aggressive teams going for 2-point conversions.
Awesome idea. I love it.
And Tebow's ideal for that, right? Because you put Tebow, the way I would draw it up, and I'm not a football mind really in terms of like X's and O's, but if you have Tebow back in a shotgun type scenario and you put like Darren Sproles to one side and DeMarco Murray to the other, you go two tight ends on the end of the line and then one receiver out wide. How are you going to defend that with that combination of personnel? There's so many different options there that it's like creating a play in Madden. Like, I made a play in Madden once that my roommates couldn't stop it. It wasn't like the world's greatest play for any other reason other than the players were all going in so many different directions, could do so many different things that there was always something I could do.
Yeah, and going into that situation with like a Tebow at quarterback and Sproles and the other guys, it's kind of like going to the line in Madden with like 12 different audibles to choose from.
That's what it is. So I think they're going to have a really good success rate this year going for two, assuming they keep him. I would think they would because they traded Matt Barkley to Arizona today.
Yeah,
you like that for Arizona just to shore
don't
up their
care.
Depth?
He's terrible.
He's awful.
I don't care at all.
Well, the Redskins, who were on the brink of a perfect preseason, which is...
I'd say they achieved it.
They've had an amazing preseason.
I think they had the best offseason I've ever seen.
Well, they narrowly missed it, I think, because they lost last night. They could have had a 4-0 preseason to cap off just so much goodness. There was nobody of significance who played in this game. There were none. There were zero players we care about on the field. For this, the only thing that I want to ask you about pertaining to this Washington offense right now, with Jordan Reed's lengthy injury history, with Niles Paul down for the season, is Derek Carrier somehow going to become an interesting option at tight end, or is this just wishful thinking on behalf of fans in that franchise?
It's actually pretty interesting because he's a size speed freak for sure. I don't know. I've never seen him play. I don't know if he has a skill set of a receiver or they just like him because he's, you know, he's good at like, you know, playing in motion and blocking in motion or good at, you know, moving around the formation. I don't know. They traded a fifth round pick though for him, I think. And he was an undrafted player just 2 years ago, I want to say. So
out of Beloit College, just down the road from us.
Yeah, it's weird. But yeah, if they traded for him, giving up a fifth round pick, it seems like they plan to use him. And even if they didn't plan to, Reed's injury history, as you mentioned, might kind of force the issue anyway. I don't know what to make of it, but he's you know really really fast. So that's kind of makes him interesting to begin with, just because. I don't know. Like it's not like Kirk Cousins is going to throw the ball downfield a lot with much success, so he might need that check down target. And if he can create stuff after the catch, it'll be interesting.
The Steelers fell in the debut of Josh Scobie, which is really sad.
Bad trade, I'd have to say, then.
Horrible trade. But Cameron Artis Payne had pretty heavy work here for the Panthers. 12 carries for 67 yards. Jordan Todman had 5 for 72 thanks to a 49-yarder. He actually got into the end zone as well. Fozzie Whitaker had 3 for 18. As far as the battle to back up Jonathan Stewart goes, Is it Cameron Artis Payne's job before this season is over?
I have no idea, because they do seem to like Fozzie quite a bit, and he's got some traction in the organization already. Todman, I don't know. I've always liked Todman, but it's, I don't know if it's just he's so small, teams don't want to like try to get, they don't try to capitalize on his big playability because he's a blitz pickup liability. I have no idea. But he's always like really good when he gets the ball. But it's not clear if Carolina has any intention of doing that. So I'd kind of lead toward Artis Payne, just because he's so reliably steady between the tackles relative to the other two. The other two are kind of like gimmicky players, really. But Artis Payne is a low upside kind of player, but he's also probably the type who can give you, you know, an average of 4 yards a carry if you really need it. So,
I mean, do you think Jordan Todman has like a Justin Forsett kind of thing going on? But the difference is that the Panthers' offensive line this year is not going to be nearly as good as the Ravens' blocking scheme was last year.
I don't think there's a chance that he'll have that, just because I know Stewart's very injury prone, but even if it happens, he's the kind of guy who's like third in line on the depth chart, not second, you know? So it's, you'd need Fozzie to get hurt, and Fozzie actually has a really long injury history too, so it's possible. And he's faster than Forsett. He's more explosive, but he also might be a little bit smaller, and I can't speak as to whether he's a good enough blocker for teams to leave him on the field in passing situations.
I think that makes sense. Now, the Schwartz Bowl happened. That was the Lions and Bills. Of course, Jim Schwartz, former head coach of the Lions, now defensive coordinator in Buffalo. This defense for the Bills, I mean, I think it's a top five defense again. And we talked earlier about the running backs, kind of a mess behind LeSean McCoy. But are they going to be pretty similar in build defensively as last year? Can they be pretty much a defense you throw out there every week, almost regardless of opponent?
Yeah, I guess they're going to stick with their 4-3 scheming for the most part, which is very, you know, reasonable. It doesn't make any sense to go 3-4 when you have those two defensive tackles, Darius and Kyle Williams, and then Hughes and Mario Williams are, you know, they're guys who have their hand on the ground. They don't play linebacker. So they smartly, they didn't go with the Rex Ryan trend of, his normal strategy is going with a 3-4, but he's smart enough to not do that here. I don't know much about their linebackers. I know Preston Brown was pretty promising last year, played a lot as a rookie. Bradham put up numbers too. The secondary has some question marks. There's some generally just unproven, like, you got a journeyman type at safety, like Corey Graham. Stephon Gilmore is a known commodity, but then it's like they might be going with the second round pick rookie Ronald Darby as the other starter. Nickell Roby's like 5'5.5". He's been really good, but it's like, I don't know anyway, they should be able to rush the passer pretty well, especially with the blitzing knowledge of Ryan, and Schwartz always gets pretty good results when he's allowed to focus on defense. So I agree, they'll be a top defense. That whole division has some very good looking defenses. I think all four of them are pretty intimidating. So I think those are like four of the probably 10 best defenses in the league this year.
So some late breaking news. I assumed that Jim Schwartz stayed on. He did not. Rex Ryan actually fired him upon becoming the head coach. They're going with Dennis Thurman as their defensive coordinator. But it's a Rex Ryan
defense. I like Rex more than Schwartz anyway. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, more or less, it's an upgrade, if nothing else. Schwartz did a good job as the defensive coordinator last year. He took a job. He's going to help the NFL officials in some kind of administrative role this year until the right coaching opportunity comes along. I love statements like that. It's until the right thing comes along, I'm going to do this job.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that he's being that charitable, like just helping us out like that. Well, in the meantime, looking out for us.
Man of the people. Falcons, Ravens. This one went 20-19 in favor of the Falcons. Tevin Coleman got pretty good work here, and I think that was more to do with the absence due to the hamstring injury he's been dealing throughout the preseason. 8 carries for 56 yards. I think at this point with Devontae Freeman still banged up, you're looking at a situation where Tevin Coleman's in line to see maybe 15-plus carries right away in week one against the Eagles.
Yeah, that would definitely be very interesting. I kind of expect the Eagles' run defense to be a bit tougher this year because they're just so loaded at linebacker, and their defensive line personnel is pretty good too. But I love Tevin Coleman as a prospect. I don't think it makes any sense for Melvin Gordon to go 15th overall and Coleman in the third round. They were very similar players in terms of output last year, although they're slightly different, you know, stylistically. But I love Tevin Coleman, but I also like Devontae Freeman. So I don't know what the status of his health will dictate for week one. But if he's available, you got to think they're going to go with him mostly and hurry up and like obvious passing and probably starting to. But yeah, they definitely got to work in Coleman because he's so good. But I think they're both good, and it's makes sense for them to kind of take an even split basically.
Yeah, I just think it's going to be tough for me to figure out, unless we start to see them really tip their hand consistently, which guy gets the goal line carries, who they're going to use more as the pass catching back. It just seems like they can kind of mix and match, use both guys in whichever role they feel like they want any given time. It's not like one guy can't catch passes. It's not like one guy can't be a short yardage back. It's not two pieces that complement each other very well. It's two guys that are kind of similar.
Yeah, and I mean, Kyle Shanahan is their offensive coordinator, right? I believe that.
Yep.
Okay. So if they do anything vaguely similar to Houston, you know, back in the day, you know, following that, you know, sort of Kubiak sort of philosophy with the running game, I mean, Arian Foster, Ben Tate is not what I would expect there exactly, but I can see both of those guys running for like 800 yards this year. Probably, I would almost expect it like Coleman have more rushing yards, but Freeman probably has 150, 200 more yards receiving, something like that. But basic point, I think they're pretty much the same prospect for fantasy drafts and everything.
Yeah, maybe it's as simple as, you know, taking the cheaper one over the course of the weekend, but I think that right. might be Freeman in many cases, since Coleman is a bit healthier and has a lot of buzz as a possible breakout guy here as a rookie. If you're out for the evening and you've been drinking, get a ride, call a cab, or find some other safe way home, because getting arrested for drunk driving can cost you a lot more than an arrest and a fine. You could face legal fees, court costs, the loss of your license, and more. Right now, cops all across the country are cracking down on drunk driving, and they'll see you before you see them. Drive sober or get pulled over. It's time for our safe sleeper pick, sponsored by Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over. We'll be drinking beers at our drafts this weekend, which leads to bad decisions in the later rounds, or worse decisions like getting behind the wheel afterwards. This is more of a mid-round target, but it is Tevin Coleman. He's today's safe sleeper pick. I mean, this is a guy that I think, even if he's working in tandem with Freeman, as we were talking about before, he's going to play. He's going to play a lot. I think he can be very efficient on a per-touch basis.
Yeah, and as I was saying before, like I consider him an equal prospect to Melvin Gordon for the most part. Like, to me, Gordon was a late first kind of guy, and Tevin Coleman an early second, as opposed to a mid first on Gordon and early third on Coleman. So Coleman ran for 2,036 yards in 12 games last year at 7.5 yards per carry, 15 touchdowns. That's on a team. Okay, so 2,036 yards. His offense threw the ball for 1,697 yards and 7 touchdowns. So he was averaging 7.5 per attempt on an offense that averaged 5.4 per pass. That's just, that doesn't make any sense. Like, defenses didn't care about the pass, and Indiana barely even tried to do it because their quarterback was so bad. And like, still, he's putting up 7.5 yards a carry. That was one of the most remarkable seasons I've ever seen. He's very fast. I think in terms of a prospect, I think he's very similar to DeMarco Murray. The criticisms of him coming out of college are very similar to what you heard about DeMarco Murray. You know, the perceived straight line sort of play. But yeah, I think Coleman's awesome. I don't think he can have the results that he had. And, you know, he has the physical dimensions. Like, he timed fast at his pro day once he got over that foot injury that kept him out of the combine. I don't think you can produce like he did and not be a good player. He's basically like probably one of the five most efficient college running backs of all time. And I'm not inclined to think that he won't succeed in the NFL given that.
Well, and he played well against teams like Michigan State and Ohio State, which had exactly. legitimately good defenses, not just good defenses in the Big Ten, but good defenses in the national context.
And he did it 2 years, too, I should say. In 2013, he actually had he tied for the national lead in runs of 40-plus yards, despite missing, I want to say, 4 games with a foot injury, or 3 games. But yeah, he averaged 7.3 yards per carry in 2013 too. So he did it so many times. The sample size is huge. Like, I'm sold on him. But obviously the ceiling is going to depend on his workload and how quickly he can acclimate to the NFL and deal with things like pass blocking and so on. But in the long run, I think he's really a good prospect.
Try to run through the remaining games on the slate as quickly as possible with the Patriots and Giants. The only thing that really stood out to me is that Reggie Wayne was targeted 10 times, only got 2 balls, but then I looked and saw that Ryan Lindley played the entire game at quarterback, and everything made sense. For me, Reggie Wayne could be a useful wide receiver 3 in full-point PPR leagues. You're talking like a 14-team league once you get to the bye weeks, but that to me seems like the extent of his value.
Yeah, I'm expecting nothing from him, really. Just too slow. I don't know. There's other targets in that offense, too.
I do wonder if James White is in danger of losing his roster spot. Probably. He had 10 carries for 36 yards in this one. Might be a guy that's available to other teams here as roster cutdown weekend takes place. Texans and Cowboys in Dallas. Dustin Vaughn played quarterback for the Cowboys. I've never even heard of Dustin Vaughn before, so it gives you an idea where things are at with this this performance.
Yeah, he was one of those backup passers at the combine. Like, he was invited but not allowed to participate. He had to just throw the ball when like receivers were running route drills.
He was one of those guys?
Yeah, he was.
That probably you probably get all the Under Armour swag and probably like I don't know, a few meals at
all that
at nearby
extra
restaurants.
Hotel soap bars that you can grab from the carts.
Yeah, from the Holiday Inn Express.
Worth it.
Yeah, totally. Tom Savage played most this game for Texans and nothing.
He's out for a while. I can't remember what I read the injury was, but he's out for a while. I guess Tom Savage show will have to wait a while.
Yeah, maybe later this year. It's a possibility. Marcus Mariota played a little bit in the Titans-Vikings game, 2 of 3 for 74 yards and a touchdown before giving way to the likes of Alex Tanny, Zach Mettenberger, and Charlie Whitehurst. Bishop Sankey had 6 carries for 17 yards. I still can't get excited about Bishop Sankey unless the price is next to nothing. I just think he busted so badly last year that even if the per carry numbers improve, which they should because Marcus Mariota changes the way opposing defenses have to play, I think it's David Cobb who eventually emerges to have some value in that backfield if anyone does on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I like Cobb more. I don't know what his injury situation is, if he's still questionable or whatever for week one. If he's out for week one, I can actually see Sankey being useful in PPR at least because Mariota might need to check down a little bit. No one else is really going to play much for them. So he could get volume, and if the price is right, then it could pay off.
Had an Isaiah Pede sighting in the Rams-Chiefs matchup. I imagine he'll be cut very soon. 12 carries for 52 yards and a touchdown. Very few starters played in this one. We saw Tavon Austin a little bit. And I mean, there may be a few listeners out there who still think that Tavon Austin could turn into a useful weapon someday, but is that really going to happen?
Are you really out there? I don't think that person's out there.
Hit us up on Twitter if you exist. Prove that you exist if you still think Tavon Austin is interesting from a fantasy standpoint, because there's got to be at least one person listening who's.
You better have a verified checker. I'm not believing it anyway.
It'll be a made-up account that doesn't have any followers.
It's a troll.
It's the first
Only a
tweet.
Troll would say that.
Probably. Not much to note here from the Broncos and Cardinals. Monte Ball, 16 carries for 27 yards. Probably not going to work here anymore, I think, if you're looking at him in
the
lens of the
Broncos. We might see him end up in that Dallas backfield, making it even more boring than it already is. Who knows? Anyway,
would he even be good there, though?
I don't know. I don't think he's a very good player. I didn't like him that much as a prospect. He went ahead of Eddie Lacy, though.
Brett Bielema was playing him ahead of Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, well, if you get the chance to do that, you just got to do it every time.
Oh man, there are things about Burt that I miss, but I still get enough good images from the internets. Of course, Twitter is good for that. You know, Burt wearing a grill cover at the handshakes. Mm. Burt taking on the physical appearance of a Razorback as he continues to just kind of expand and get more like grizzly.
That red tan on in the belly.
Yeah, he gets pretty
becoming
pretty
the mascot. Becoming the mascot.
He is becoming the mascot. Jarod Hayne, 10 carries for 58 yards in the Niners-Chargers matchup. If he makes the roster, I think he's kind of interesting, but that's like...
Sorry, what's his name?
Jarod Hayne.
I don't know who that is.
The Australian rugby star who's been in camp with the Niners and has been with them for the entire preseason.
Oh, cool.
He's looked pretty good as a kick returner. Good vision. Pretty good after contact. Like I said, he has to hang around. Probably play special teams. Probably going to be inactive for a few weeks. But if he's on that roster, a couple backs get hurt. I don't know. Maybe there's a chance he has some value at some point this year. But most likely, it's not going to happen. Last game, Raiders and Seahawks. I'm so thankful this is the very last preseason game we're going to talk about for a very long time.
Hurry and leave preseason. Hurry.
Russell Wilson threw one pass, and it was a 63-yard touchdown strike to Tyler Lockett, who actually had a really good preseason overall, showing his explosive ability as a kick returner, contributing a little bit on offense. On a team that has such boring receivers, I could see Lockett actually being the player they thought they were going to get with Percy Harvin a few years ago.
Yeah, I think he's a really good player. I think he can be a DeSean Jackson kind of player at least. And if there's kind of like a John Brown surprise, receiver of the slot build and the speed that I think it's Lockett. If they let him play, he'll produce. I don't know if they'll play him much.
I think he'll definitely be in the kick return game.
Oh, yeah, he will.
But yeah, as far as snaps on offense, maybe it takes a few weeks before they actually do that now that the games are going to count. Thank you for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you make your deposit for a free contest entry today. Also, check out RotoWire for free for the next 10 days by going to RotoWire.com/pod. If you're drafting this weekend, just search RotoWire in your app store. You can get our draft kit. It's $4.99. Extremely helpful. You can punch in your league parameters. Gives you custom cheat sheets based on your league settings. Thanks again for listening. Have a safe and happy Labor Day weekend. Nick and I will be back with you on Monday.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.